Welcome to ClinPharm Pod. I'm Elena Webster, Deputy Managing Editor for the ASCPT Journal family. My guests today are Dr. Sebastian Schneeweis, Professor of Medicine and Epidemiology at Harvard Medical School and guest editor for the most recent themed issue of Clinical Pharmacology and Therapeutics, and Dr. Rebecca Mixot, Associate Professor of Medicine at Boston University, Chief Medical Officer at Color Health, and Associate Editor of CPT. Thank you both so much for taking the time to stop by ClinPharm Pod. This month, CPT published its first themed issue of 2025, titled Bench to Budget, Streamlining the Full Spectrum of Evidence Integration to Enhance Efficiency and Impact of Drug Development and Patient Access. How did the editorial team decide on this particular theme, Rebecca?
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast today. That's a mouthful of a title, isn't it? It really boils down to the bench to bedside concept, which has been common in drug development and improving health outcomes for many decades. But what we see time and time again is that cost, whether we describe it as value, insurance coverage, or budget limitations, is still a very key component of how new therapeutics actually reach patients and how they impact patients in the real world. So we really need to expand that bench to bedside to include budget. That was the genesis of this journal, to really focus on that full integration. And we realized that the integration of clinical pharmacology and other specialties represented by the journal audience is really critical for the best outcomes for patients by being involved throughout that whole process.
Thank you. So to start with a bit of an overview, Sebastian, how did the field of pharmacoepidemiology develop, and this idea of bench to budget, how has it changed from its initial inception up to the present day?
Well, thank you for having me on the podcast. The idea of this concept comes solely from Rebecca. Once I heard this, I was immediately excited about this, because that's exactly what clinicians need: integrated evidence from all sorts of sources of data, of populations, different analytic approaches, in order to have a holistic picture of how medications work in clinical practice. And that's exactly how this special issue unfolded. I'm really pleased with the quality of the article. I didn't foresee such strong articles would pop up here in such a condensed way. Our editorial highlights a little bit as a reading guide how we should approach this. And one article that really highlights this integrated evidence planning is Jens Krüger and Srikant Varinathan's paper that is really beautifully outlining how integrated evidence planning works, what you achieve with that, what you should keep in mind. But then you read other articles within the same special issue that fill in the gaps in exactly what is needed for this integrated evidence planning. There are articles, for example, on planning, let me find this here, on the concepts, methods, and use of probability of success in drug development by Arsun Yavuz. And that's a beautiful paper that is needed for pipeline decision-making, or this other article, decision-making criteria methods for initiating late-stage clinical trials in drug development. An article that highlights the many decisions you have to make on this journey from research with a product to paying for the product in the end to make the best medications available to the patient at the right time.
Together, we really do have a broad reach, and I am also really pleased with the response to this concept of bench to budget.
So Sebastian touched on this slightly, but Rebecca, you two did work together to write the editorial, which is subtitled Integrated Evidence Generation for Medications. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Definitely. So I'm a medical oncologist. I actually still see patients every Friday morning, colon cancer and high-risk cancer genetics. The biggest question patients always ask me is that clinical trials showed it was a great drug, but what about me? What about the fact that I have heart disease, or I previously had a splenectomy? All of these very unique situations that are purposely actually excluded from clinical trials because you're focusing on the
efficacy
of the drug. And when we think about integrating evidence, we want to actually be able to answer those patients' questions by pulling in data from other people who've had their spleen out, or from other people who have heart disease, to pull those two strong pieces of evidence together to really understand how it works in the world. And I wanted to highlight the articles that I think really help demonstrate how that integration can happen. This is often a purview of the health technology assessment bodies, which are agencies within Europe that help countries understand the types of medications that they want to make available for their populations. Now, there's an article by Seamus Kent and Karen Facey about planning post-launch evidence generations using lessons from France, England, and Spain. Once a drug is approved, usually based on clinical trials, although there is space for real-world evidence in that process, how do we now understand how it works in a real-world population? And how can we set ourselves up for success to be able to learn how it actually works in real patients? This article I wanted to highlight was by Sarah Emmond and Dan Ollendorf, where they're harmonizing the HTA evidence needs and the expectations that both internally within government as well as externally the general population have for their efforts. Because on one hand, we would love to know everything about everybody and every complication some patient might have. And on the other hand, we need to do it quickly so we can make changes in real time if we need to make those refinements.
Thank you. The editorial also calls special attention to the push toward population-level healthcare and using, as you mentioned, real-world evidence to inform work in the lab and during budgeting. What are some of the common pitfalls that researchers and clinicians, those in budgetary offices, and even patients might encounter?
It gets back to the fact that clinical trials rarely are fully representative of the population. And we really do need to understand those issues with heart disease at the population level, which is very heterogeneous, both within countries as well as across countries. One of the papers that does take a look at that representative components is by Ori Benedum, Sama Sakar, and Sandy Grisheth, where they're using POP-REFINE as a comprehensive framework for evaluating and optimizing the representativeness of clinical trials so that we can do a better job even before we have regulatory approval to understand how the drugs work in the different populations. I think there will always be a space to do it afterwards just because of the time course and the focus on efficacy with clinical trials, but having it beforehand as well as afterwards really can help us better understand how the drugs work at the population level, which is where these really big regulatory government decisions are made.
Sebastian, CPT always tries to highlight research into understudied and underserved populations, and we make a particular effort to do so in our themed issues. There's some great research along that vein included here. What papers would you suggest for readers interested in these topics?
I think the most important understudied population over and over again is pediatrics. The very first perspective actually on this issue is in pediatric pharmacoepidemiology and drug development from a regulatory perspective. And McMahon did a fantastic job in summarizing these issues because real-world evidence is the great hope here that we can improve the situation absent of RCTs in children. There are a whole bunch of other articles from regulatory agencies. There's an article on Clinical Evidence 2030, which is EMA's perspective on what to do with pediatric indications and what to do with real-world evidence in regulatory decision-making by key leaders of the agency. Peter Arlett is one of the co-authors, Patrice Verpillard, Karl Bruch, Spiros, Valakas, Uki. This is a fantastic overview paper of how regulators think about small disease areas, rare diseases, special populations, and how to integrate all that evidence. Another regulatory article comes from the Japanese agency, PMDA, and the lead author is Yoshiaki Uyama, together with Yunishi Zarano, highlighting how the PMDA thinks about single-arm trials, where fundamentally observational research strategy are applied to make decisions on medication approval before they are marketed. So quite a variety of themes that we touch here, this issue.
And Sebastian, I want to call out a paper from your lab about pregnancy. While pregnancy is not a rare population, it is understudied because of the complexities. And the work by Krista Hubrichs and Sonia Hernandez-Diaz about evidence generation on medication effectiveness and safety during pregnancy, critical for moving the field forward. How can we both protect the mothers and the developing children while also understanding and learning more about the medication effectiveness so that we can continue to protect mothers and children going forward?
Exactly. And I think what you will see throughout the entire issue, nobody in any of these papers says, let's replace RCTs with real world evidence. It's all about the complementary nature of these approaches, these different data sources, different designs, in order to fill all the evidence gaps. There's a wonderful paper by a group of fantastic experts. Rohini Hernandez is leading that, but Nancy Dreyer, Tim Lash from Emory, Hendrik Sorensen from Alan Brookhart from Duke, Brian Bradbury from Amgen, and many other experts across academia and in industry, highlighting what real-world evidence has achieved over the last few decades. Where are we now? What can we do? And maybe what are the limits, right? We don't want to compete with RCTs. It's about the integration of those ways to generate evidence.
I was really excited that we were able to pull in the AI perspective for this bench-to-budget component. There's a lot of talk about generative AI, but when it comes down to it, how can these new tools both help us find new drugs, which some companies are doing, and also develop AI-driven clinical trials? That's a fascinating piece by Dominica Wilcox and Alex Sabarakov in terms of thinking through both the progress we've made and, most importantly, the pitfalls. People at the vanguard of using AI, I'm always impressed when they're able to describe just their pitfalls so that we can learn and do better next time.
Thank you. Sebastian, touching again on the perspectives and commentaries, these are always very interesting, and you've mentioned a few, but these often ask readers to commit to change within the field or express a call to action of sorts. What actionable takeaways will readers find in this issue?
What I love about all these articles, they're all very hands-on. They're written by people in the middle of the action, and Rebecca and I really focused on getting authors like that. And I think we succeeded at that. They show us where they think the field is moving to, where you should invest more, where you should train up, where you should hire talent. Very hands-on advice that I read across all these articles, whether that is from a regulatory perspective, this clinical evidence 2030, very far horizon there, or many of the other articles. Very useful hands-on stuff.
The takeaway I really want is to think about real-world evidence much earlier in the drug development process. I think real-world evidence has always been around, whether it was called health services research or outcomes research, very late. Almost too late to direct and change how we develop medication. By moving real-world evidence earlier, whether it's a component of decision-making or whether it's a component of how we conduct trials for representativeness, I think really expands our ability to do and end up at the right point for both individual patients and population level healthcare.
That's a great response. It actually leads me right into my next question for you, Rebecca, which is, are there any papers that really highlight real-world evidence applications that you would point readers toward? How do we move these approaches from the lab or trial phases to patients' bedsides?
That's a really important question, and one of the things we want readers to take away by focusing on this broad breadth of how real-world evidence can be used at these various time points. And also, I really want to help readers see how there's bi-directional influence. So something that you might gather data for one drug in a post-approval setting can actually really be highly influential by bringing those results earlier into drug development process to inform the next drug or to inform the next indication for that drug.
Thank you. As always, I have thoroughly enjoyed our conversation, and I want to thank you for all of your hard work and dedication in putting this important issue together. Are there any thoughts that you'd like to share before we close out today?
I just want to thank everybody who was involved in putting this issue together. Most importantly, our researchers and experts who put their time and energy into really trying to communicate what they do to the audience. And of course, the staff, you, Elena, and Althea, and Pete, and Spiros, Jay, and Mai. It takes a true team to pull this type of issue together. Thank you to everyone. You made Sebastian's and my job easy.
I want to echo what Rebecca just said. Having fantastic staff support makes things just go so easy. We can really focus on the fun conversations we had with the authors. It was great fun collaborating with you, Rebecca. Thank you for thinking about me. And also, I thank Pete, for the editor-in-chief, for thinking about me. When do we do this again?
Again, thank you both so much for speaking with me today. This has been a fun conversation and very interesting as well. And I'm already looking forward to chatting about the next theme issue with you soon. Thank you for listening to Clin Pharm Pod. You can find a link to the full issue in the description of this episode. While you're here, be sure to check out past episodes and remember to visit ascpt.org for updated podcast releases, our latest webinars, and the most recent issue of all three journals.